Hello and welcome to Unquestionably Nerdy, the show where we talk about everything that makes us want to geek out, freak out, and stare at a high school trophy case and hear the faintest of carpe diem. I am one of your hosts, Kadam MacArthur, and whom am I joined by?
You're joined by the greatest Dead Poets Society fan ever. Are we really doing this, Kadam?
We're doing something around Dead Poets Society. Cole, how do you feel about teachers, fictional and non-so?
Great. I would say I had great teachers growing up. I still get taught a lot of things from classic TV, you know, when they all had motifs.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure if he'd be counted as a teacher or not. Well, I know he wouldn't. But G.I. Joe, knowing is half the battle.
Oh, yeah. PSAs count as education.
Then public service announcements, the last, like, minute and a half of every G.I. Joe episode. Some of the greatest lessons.
Yeah, we'll go over the definitions of teacher that we have found, all of which are fairly similar. I don't know how much we'll learn from those, like we've done in previous episodes in this series. But yeah, we should clarify, today, dear audience and Cole, we're talking about teachers, as it is like the beginning times of the school year in late August. We decided to celebrate some teachers and some of the bravest souls that we know. Taking on education at any level is, of course, braver than anything we do.
Entirely. I have many friends who have started their school year in their second week now, and
mm-hmm.
God help their souls. They are really putting in all the effort.
Yeah. I, of course, have my dad who's a teacher and lots of family who are teachers. You are eventually going to be a professor one day.
I very much hope to be.
That's the goal. Unless podcasting takes off and we become millionaires right away.
I'll still be a professor.
Yeah, sure. Why not?
They'll just have to listen to my podcast for extra credit.
I detect a hint of bias, but that's okay. But today, yes, we are going to be celebrating teachers in the best way we can, and that is with a deathmatch of famous teachers. The same way we celebrate fathers and, I guess, robots and fictional wizards and whatnot. Unlike real wizards, I guess. We're going to be celebrating these teachers by gathering a list of famous fictional teachers from pop culture and cinema and other famous stories, and we're going to bring them into a list and a racket and see which ones, both, like we did with our deathmatch of famous fictional dads, we're going to see who comes out on top in terms of a battle to the death, and we're going to see which one is actually the best teacher, the best instructor, the best leader of their pupils, which one carries on the most wisdom to their pupils, etc., etc.
Okay. I'm glad that we have the second category this time instead of just fighting teachers again. I feel like we've got to judge them on their skills.
I think so.
And their combat ability.
I'd agree with that. But I suppose, like we did we've done with a good bit of our deathmatch episodes, we'll start off with the definition thereof teacher. Again, not a whole lot to glean from these, but I felt like there were one or two interesting distinctions in the definitions I found. Merriam-Webster, of course, defines teacher as one whose occupation is to instruct. Pretty straightforward. Dictionary.com classifies them as a person who teaches or instructs, especially as a profession. And then Oxford Dictionary had a little interesting distinction. One who or that which teaches or instructs. Interesting little that which. Not sure, like, so in that case, could a book be a teacher if it instructs you?
I think so. I think I also like the Oxford definition best. I think it's just a better definition.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody, just so you know the current times, we are recording this on August 26th, the day after we lost two in a row, Dolly Parton and Tim Curry.
Yes.
Dolly's a teacher.
Oh, yeah.
Dolly's going to have her own shirt of what would Dolly do if it doesn't already exist.
I'm sure somebody has it.
I would say if it doesn't, we should get on that and trademark the shit out of it.
I'm pretty sure her estate will have something to say about that, but we can have that legal discussion later.
Fair enough. But Dolly, great teacher. She was one who taught through her actions, maybe not having the profession of teaching. But I feel like that's why the Oxford definition is by far the superior definition, because you can find teachers not just in the profession. I would say that kind of the triangle of all humanly good things,
mm-hmm.
which I think you've seen before, I forgot what it was, but it's kindness to people, which is Mr. Rogers, kindness mm-hmm. to animals, which is Steve Irwin, the crocodile hunter, and then kindness to yourself, I want to say, or just like inner happiness, which is Bob Ross.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like Dolly Parton definitely goes into the Mr. Rogers category, if not somewhere in between Mr. Rogers and Bob Ross.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, that's kind of the teachers that are not teachers.
Yeah.
And there's so many more of those.
I'd agree. There's lots to learn from lots of hopeful, wise figures like Dolly and Tim Curry and the other wholesome figures which you named. And with that, we bid them adieu, thank them for their time. And I think we can jump into this tier list. Not tier list, deathmatch.
Deathmatch it is.
Deathmatch it is.
I'll be sad about the death part, but in the out-teaching each other part, game on.
Well, yeah, like we said, as we did with our deathmatch of famous fictional dads, if you haven't seen that episode, go watch it. We did it for Father's Day. We will be analyzing these contestants, not only for their combative abilities in one ranking, but also their teaching abilities in another ranking. So we're going to have essentially two winners for this episode, our best combatant and our best overall teacher. So I suppose we can jump into our first round, starting off with our first two combatants, that being Professor Indiana Jones, Dr. Indiana Jones, Dr. Henry Jones, versus John Keating from Dead Poets Society.
John Keating.
Okay, in which classification? Deathmatch or teacher?
Sorry. 100% the teacher one. There is no argument in the teacher one. I also don't think there's an argument in the fighting one. I think that's
really.
I think that's Indiana Jones because John Keating doesn't have a weapon.
I thought you were gonna go John Keating for both.
No, I feel like it's Indiana Jones because he has the whip. He has the experience fighting a muscle man who got
mm-hmm.
basically torn to shreds by an airplane propeller and other Nazis.
Yes.
Even though his combat experience was not needed at all to make Raiders work. I've seen that opinion. It makes sense. I hate whoever actually came up with it and talks about it. We all agree with you. Just shut the fuck up.
Just don't talk about it.
But also, how many times did Indy have to get Brody? His name was Brody, right? His Oxford friend that we saw in Kingdom of the Crystal Skull? Or was it something else?
Yeah, Brody. Brody was his boss at the university. I don't think it was Oxford.
I thought he taught at Oxford. But yes.
No, he teaches in America.
Either way, so yes, Marcus Brody.
Marcus Brody.
How many times do you think Indy had to go to Brody and be like, hey, I'm going to be gone for like 3 weeks because, I don't know, somebody came up with a scoop on the Holy Grail. So can you teach class for me?
Well, it's got to be like every time he goes out on an adventure, every time he goes on an archaeological expedition, because he's got to get one, you know, leave from Brody, and he's got to get, you know, funding from Brody for the expedition, and he's got to get like Brody is the one who connects him with the museum to, you know, send the artifacts to.
I mean, exactly. There is no time for him to teach because he's basically finding new artifacts and shit like every 5 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
So he barely hits enough time in a classroom to even be worth the teaching side of this fight.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I will give respect to older Indy.
Mm-hmm.
He was a good teacher in The Dial of Destiny, which if you guys haven't seen it, still a solid Indiana Jones movie for him being that old. But also, he taught to people in like the late 60s and 70s. So these were all just, they didn't want to be in like an ancient history class. They were hippies. They just wanted to wait until they could get outside and then let the smoke fly.
It's very true. I will say, I'm giving one credit to Indy's teaching ability. You're right, we don't see much of his teaching ability throughout the movies. Like each movie has like one or two scenes dedicated to him in the classroom and the rest of his going off and adventuring, which of course makes sense. But to give credit to Indy's, you know, basis of knowledge, I mean, how much better basis can you get for a teacher than somebody who's actually going out on these expeditions and discovering real magical artifacts and seeing the face of God and then coming back and teaching about it?
Oh, in terms of, like, qualifications, out of the park. He is completely overqualified to be the archaeology professor.
Without a doubt.
He is just the most qualified archaeology professor that could ever exist, basically.
For sure.
Does that mean that he's a good teacher? No.
Fair.
Does that mean that he is probably the hottest teacher in his academic department? Based on the fact that he's played by Harrison Ford and there were multiple scenes in those movies where all the girls fawned at Harrison Ford.
Come on.
I mean, come on.
He's not winning that. He's not losing that battle.
Yeah, he's not losing that battle. I was going to say, the man had girls fawning over him, I'm pretty sure, even in the fourth movie. So he just isn't losing that battle to any archaeologist.
Yeah, looking at the rest of this list of teachers we have lined up, if we were judging the hottest teacher, yeah, I feel like Harrison would walk away with it pretty easy. But we can keep that ranking in the background. Okay, give me your reasoning for John Keating. Why best teacher?
I mean, he's just above the bar of Indiana Jones. I want to save my spiel on John Keating until he gets to a worthy opponent in the teaching category.
Okay. Interesting.
Just know he is better.
Okay. I know how much John Keating means to you, so there is a lot to say about John Keating and his teaching ability. Without getting too far into it, I would agree his ability to connect with his students, his ability to help them find their passion and get to what the heart of poetry and literature all means. We can go into more detail as we go on, but I know how much this character means to you, so I will agree with you on that decision, on this ranking during this round, and we'll leave more exploration of Keating for later rounds. So for this first round, Indiana, Dr. Jones takes the first combat win, and John Keating takes the first instructional win. And that leads us on to our second pair, that being Miss Frizzle from Magic School Bus versus Dewey Finn from School of Rock.
You may hate me for this one.
Okay.
Well, first of all, I do have to ask the question. When we're talking Dewey Finn of School of Rock, are we talking about the Nickelodeon series that ran for like 3 seasons? Or are we talking about specifically the movie? Or are we talking about a combination of both?
I forgot there was a show. I was thinking the movie, but if you want to bring in the show as well, go for it.
The show isn't much better. He's still just as chaotic.
Yeah.
I'm just going to go Miss Frizzle for both of these. Like
is also where I was leaning.
It's chaos incarnate. I love that Dewey Finn is teaching his students instruments because music is important. There have been studies that have proved that the only reason that Cad and I are good at math is because we played instruments.
Fair.
So that's a plus for Dewey. Him not having any teaching certification and basically being terrible at everything else that had to be taught, questionable. However, he did start the best way possible, which was start as a substitute, at least know what happens during a school day, and then lie your way into a better position. So I respect the grind.
Yeah, I'll agree with all that. Yeah, Dewey Finn doing more of you know, the ability to connect with their students and be able to get them to recognize how the subject matter connects to them, even though they don't have the upfront expectation of having a personal importance with music, but showing them how important it can be and how it can add to their lives and, you know, add to their personalities and their abilities outside of music. Yeah, Dewey Finn ends up being a great teacher in the movie, but I think Miss Frizzle as a teacher, I mean, how, going back to like the arguments for Indiana Jones, how much more up close and experienced can she be? She takes them to space. She takes them underwater. She takes them into the human body. She takes them basically fucking everywhere with the Magic School Bus.
She is the most hands down interactive teacher. She's teaching them all the subjects. And if anybody's saying, but hold on, teachers shouldn't put their kids in danger. Look, if you think Miss Frizzle was putting her kids in danger, those kids did it to themselves.
Yeah. Arnold can bite it.
Yeah, I was going to say, just go kick off to whatever dust pile you're in, or just float into the dead of space.
Yeah.
I mean, come on, Arnold.
I was going to bring up that point in the discussion of teaching, is that teachers are wardens of these children for however long they watch over them and are stewards of their safety to some degree. How many episodes is there like a moment where some seemingly treacherous event is about to occur to the kids in the bus and the kids scream, "Oh no," before it fades to black and we pick up with the next scene? Miss Frizzle does endanger those kids a lot, but they always come out fine and have learned a lot on the other side.
Because of magic.
Because of the magic of the school bus.
It also could just be the Chaos Gremlin energy.
Also true.
I would say Miss Frizzle is the definition of, I feel like, chaos incarnate. Good chaos, but 100% chaos.
Definitely. Definitely chaotic good teacher.
Also,
I'd say both for Dewey and Miss Frizzle, both chaotic good.
As part of the teaching, I feel like we gotta go with the teaching fits.
Very true. Very on theme.
Miss Frizzle's fit is just better than Dewey's.
It's very true. She is always popping off.
So, I feel like this is just a very clear on either one. I was going to say, even though she puts her students in danger,
yes,
she does give them a more well-rounded and 100% more hands-on experience with all the subjects. Plus,
absolutely,
magic. Dewey can't do shit with magic. He doesn't have that, like, Kiss guitar that blew away the darkness.
Yes.
God, I'm not even sure that you know what that Kiss guitar is from. Do you?
Educate me. Be my teacher, Cole. Get an early start at being professor.
God. There was three specials about Timmy Turner and the Fairly Odd Parents about...
Okay, I do know that one.
...blowing away this eternal darkness. And Kiss was the Guardians of the Star guitar, which ended up just being a magic wand.
Yes.
Not teachers at all, but their Kiss. They may have taught us a lesson about love or something. I feel like there was definitely a very explicit lesson at the end of that one, but then they kind of just brushed it off as a joke. Maybe it was deserved, maybe it wasn't. Either way,
who's to say?
I'm definitely going to go rewatch all three of those this week.
Yes, that special I do remember quite fondly. As soon as you mentioned Kiss banishing the darkness and all that, that is where my mind immediately went. I did not remember in enough detail to connect with it. But yes, I do remember that special fondly.
Well, I'm glad you remember that, because if at any other point it comes up today, I will be your teacher from now until when you actually kind of get your shit together and watching all the shows.
Yeah, well.
Basically any Cartoon Network, Disney, or Nickelodeon show that you may have missed from 2000 onward.
Fair. But the teaching win definitely goes to Miss Frizzle, and I think, the fight has to go to Miss Frizzle as well.
Again, magic.
Not only does she have the magic school bus, even if it was just a regular school bus, that's more than Dewey has. Just run him over.
I forgot she could use the school bus as a weapon. That's a great idea.
Mm-hmm. I think you have to give the school bus to her in the fight. I think you just have to. But even if you didn't, there is that meme of the screenshot of the show where she is just deadlifting 405 pounds. You know what meme I'm going to talk about?
No, I don't. But this kind of just sounds like that Batman thing of like, oh yeah, Batman's strong. He's big. And then you look in the comics and you're like, man, I thought he was just a normal size strong guy. I didn't know he's like one of the 10 strongest people in the world.
Oh yeah. There's a screenshot from an episode of Magic School Bus where Miss Frizzle is in the gym, the gymnasium of the school, and she is bench pressing a bar with like the four standard size plates on each size, and if they're 45 pounds each, that's 405 pounds.
Oh yeah, she's hiding some inner wizard power.
Oh yeah, she's got a sleeper build.
She's connecting to something.
Agreed. She has dark powers.
All right, so we've said that Miss Frizzle's a witch. I mean, a good witch for now, and good witches make teachers. So who's going to be able to take down Miss Frizzle? Who are our next two, Caden?
Our next two combatants, contestants, etc., are Master Yoda from Star Wars, a teacher of many generations of Jedi, versus Coach Boomer from Sky High.
Who?
Opening thoughts, Cole. Not as straightforward as you thought, right?
Okay, so we're going to go Master Yoda definitely for the teacher.
Mm-hmm.
Even though his backward sentences I only get about 67% of the time.
I feel like they're easy to grasp.
I mean, yeah. Just the more lines that he would get, you're definitely going to start losing them. They pick the lines well.
That's fair. That's fair.
I mean, Coach Boomer very famously got 5 sidekick versus hero evaluations critically wrong in that movie.
Very true.
So he wasn't doing a fantastic job at evaluating people. So, and he also got turned into a baby.
He did.
I mean, I guess that could be trying to save the kids, though.
Right.
Which puts him up there in the teacher. And Yoda just kind of let Luke go off to die. And Yoda's own Padawan did turn to the Sith.
He did. That being Dooku. It's very true. Yeah.
You gave me a really hard one, because I'm like, Yoda has like a failure and a half out of 2. Boomer has like 5 very explicit failures that make the plot of Sky High.
Right. They both have, I would say, pretty prominent wins, pretty prominent bonuses in their teaching ability, but also some pretty prominent failures. Neither of them connect, like, both of them have students that they failed to connect with very well and failed to educate at a level that they would be protected and understood and have room to grow in their abilities. But also, I mean, like, once Luke Skywalker came back to Dagobah after losing the fight on Cloud City, you know, he became one of the most powerful, best Jedi Knights ever. And Coach Boomer, you know, has either coached or been a part of some of the greatest generations of one of the greatest generations of superheroes in Sky High, with what are the characters' names? Sky High.
It's Sky High.
The Commander.
Kurt Russell, the greatest.
Yeah, right. What are their superhero names? It's the Commander and Jetstream.
Yes.
Commander and Jetstream. He is part of, like, one of the greatest generations of superheroes.
I mean, yeah. I mean, were they all that great, though? Because I was going to say the Commander and Jetstream really were the ones that basically stood a chance of taking on the villain before, you know, they got bamboozled.
True.
Nobody else in that school was really able to put up a fight.
True.
I think I'm going to throw the teacher to Yoda.
Mm-hmm.
Because we got the lineage of sword fighting and just the lineage in general. And I feel like that's an argument that you would have to take with Boomer too, is part of the lineage. And I'm like, okay, you got Count Dooku out of it. Not good. But Boomer got all those little fucks that sided with the pacifier.
Mm-hmm.
The pacifier was the weapon. Whoever Mary Elizabeth Winstead played, Royal Pain, that's what it was. Royal Pain and the pacifier. Okay. But yeah. So Boomer failed all of her little evil sidekicks. So I feel like that kind of balances out Count Dooku. But then Dooku trained Qui-Gon. Qui-Gon trained Obi-Wan. Obi-Wan trained Anakin, who is Darth Vader. But that's not Yoda's fault.
I mean, isn't it, though, to some degree? I was about to say, if we're looking at, like, the failures of their teaching, Yoda is not the direct tutor or mentor to Anakin. That's obviously Obi-Wan.
But he didn't sense that Palpatine was there the entire time.
He didn't sense that Palpatine was there. He didn't sense the darkness growing in Yoda. He oversaw the tutorship of Anakin, and it was a regular mentor figure in Anakin's life growing up, and I think that's definitely a bigger failure in letting him become Darth Vader.
All right,
under his oversight.
You know what? That is a failure, but I don't give a shit. Yoda still wins that one, because also, as I forgot, Yoda deciding not to be one who taught Sith things just kind of kept the secret that he could cast Force Ghost
Fortnite?
Yes. He was secretly playing Fortnite the entirety of The Last Jedi until he came in and threw down lightning on the tree. One of my only good parts about that movie is that Yoda comes back as a ghost and tells Luke, what the fuck? You suck at teaching.
Yep.
And then burns the tree. but also Luke should have been a better teacher from the first place. But still, Yoda wins in teaching. The half a failure of Luke Skywalker was not his fault. Luke was still very impulsive in the fifth movie, and Yoda really couldn't do much.
I guess teachers do have to allow their students to make mistakes to some degree so they can learn from them.
They do. But we're also forgetting Yoda was dealing with the sequels the entire time in the fifth movie. Like, he was trying to train Luke and deal with these stupid seagulls that were poking his knees. Like, honestly, start a mass campaign now, deport all the seagulls off of Dagobah. Like, why are they fucking with Yoda?
Pause. What the fuck are you talking about?
Sir, my god.
What, seagulls?
Seagulls, yes. Cadden.
Educate me, I guess.
Have you never seen the bad lip reading of Yoda?
Nope.
Everybody, just give your reviews in the comments of the seagulls from the Yoda bad lip reading. It is one of the greatest bad lip reading songs I think I've ever seen. And I want to say there was a little story in the middle of it. Was he rolled over a log and there was a little stick under the log. And then Yoda was like, that log had a child. And I broke down laughing and could not work for like an hour. But yeah, either way, the entire song is basically about him talking about these crappy seagulls that kept on attacking him whenever he wanted to go to the beach.
I don't think that we can count that in this ranking. I'm going to be so honest.
In my head, it is my headcanon. We can disagree on the headcanon.
That's fine. You can keep that to yourself.
Either way, please go watch that, Cadden. Just
fine.
Experience more fun things, please.
I have fun. I have a life.
Watch more comedic things. I mean, yeah, come on. You're a voice actor. You would love bad lip reading.
I guess I can see a connection. But for our superior teacher, yeah, I guess you could count Last Jedi as like at least Yoda seeing the errors in his teaching, which Coach Boomer never really gets. Like, the only acknowledgement of, like, you sidekicks really are the real heroes only comes from Commander and Jetstream at the end. So I guess, like, if we're weighing victories and failures, they both have, like, at least an equal number, or at least balance out in a similar way. So I'd probably say, like, Yoda being able to recognize the failures of the Jedi Order and staying married to structure and tradition in Last Jedi is good, and it's something that Boomer doesn't have. So I'll agree in giving Yoda the better teacher.
Better fighter, just, we're going to go ahead and call it for Yoda. It's the Force.
I mean, Coach Boomer has a useful power. We don't really see how strong it is. He just throws around his students. Another mark against him for being a good teacher. But dropping cars on kids and whatnot. Okay, if this fight were to happen in Boomer's gym, I think he'd stand a better chance, because he has control over what cars to drop and what spring floors to launch Yoda off of. But I think, like, any cars he drops on Yoda or any spring floor things that he tries to launch Yoda with, Yoda can account for that. Even if this was in a home court advantage. Home court. I think Yoda would be fine.
Again, the Force. That man is probably the jumpiest little green boy ever.
He is. Little green man.
Like, he just twirls and does, like, triple backflips and shit for fun.
True. And still needs a cane somehow.
I mean, are we sure that he really needs the cane, or he just does it to appear old and brittle before he kicks somebody's ass?
Maybe he's just aura farming.
I think it's just aura farming. It's an intimidation tactic.
Agreed. Yoda will take both the top combatant and the top teacher between him and Boomer. And with that, we will move on to our next round, which I think there's a little bit to be discussed here. I'm gonna throw at you, Cole, Minerva McGonagall from Harry Potter versus Walter White from Breaking Bad.
McGonagall's the better teacher, by far. I can't even account for that. McGonagall my favorite teacher? No.
Okay.
Out of these two, Walter White is my favorite because of just how calculating he was.
Right.
But again, that's different from my opinion of him as a teacher. I liked, I just liked how much he kind of played dirty as Heisenberg and was willing to do some shit.
Yes, yes. I think both of these rankings between best combatant and best teacher are you probably have an immediate answer for both of these, but I think neither of them are as immediately determinable as we might think. Minerva McGonagall, yes, does, you know, practically help raise Harry Potter and make him a great assist in making him a great aura. She is the head of Gryffindor House, meaning she is a constant presence in Harry's life and is obviously a great teacher, goes on to become headmistress of Hogwarts after Dumbledore. But Walter White is also a great teacher when he is able to connect with Jesse in a space that they can both operate in. Jesse is not a great student during his time as Walter's high school student, but we do know that Walter is a great teacher and very knowledgeable in chemistry, obviously. But once he's able to connect with Jesse in, you know, making drugs, Jesse becomes a great chemist, a great cook on his own. Like, he is near Walter's level when making drugs.
I mean, yeah. Okay, so yes, he is a successful meth teacher to Jesse. But McGonagall is a successful transmutation teacher to thousands of students over the years. So I still think just as a whole of also having it be for mostly good things and also caring about all of the students that she's kind of the head of Gryffindor as kind of the faculty mentor. I still think she carries the teacher pretty easily. Now what I'm thinking, though, is does McGonagall win the combat fight? Because I know it's magic. I know magic just kind of exists. It definitely should be a win. But Walter White has a gun.
Walter White sometimes has a gun. He's not always armed. McGonagall basically keeps that wand on her at all times.
Fair point. But I feel like... See, I feel like I would give Walter White a gun for this fight. Because when I always think of Walter White, while it is the end of the show, I always just think of he has a machine gun hidden in his car.
He does, but even that, the way he, you know, beats those neo-Nazis in the end, is having them in the right position. He has to duck down away from the gun, him and Jesse away from the line of fire. It's a very exact space and scenario that he would have to get McGonagall into, even if he had his car trunk gun. It would take very specific planning, where Minerva McGonagall is just going to be all around more capable, better armed, even if he has that gun that he got from that illegal dealer earlier on in the show when he wanted to kill Gus. Even if he has that handgun on him, it just takes one Expelliarmus from McGonagall to get rid of that.
I mean, true. But also, it takes casting time to cast Harry Potter spells. But yeah, if Walter White does not regularly carry a signature weapon that can be used in this fight, he's basically defenseless. Like, he's screwed.
For sure.
So, I don't even think, like, the pure meth head invincibility.
Well, he doesn't do the meth.
But again, that's one thing I'd say that he has on him, is he would at least have some pills.
He never does drugs. The only drugs he does in the show is chemotherapy, and also the one time he smokes a doobie at Jesse's house.
Okay, fair. But again, I'm just saying, in combat, if he needed to, he could channel that meth bath salts energy of just feeling invincible. I mean, come on. You basically made the... whatever Walter White's drug was, what was it called? Was it called like Heisenberg Blue or something?
Yeah, it was just blue meth.
But either way, you basically made that in your D&D campaign. I was going to say, celerity is more of that than it is cocaine.
Yeah, it's magic drugs. That's a whole other thing. Walter White isn't magic. If anybody's going to have magic drugs in this, it's going to be McGonagall, confiscated from students.
Hey, Harry Potter never showed us magic drugs. I'm not rolling with that. But either way... McGonagall wins the fight.
McGonagall wins the fight. I think, like, Walter had... I think I would honestly, from what we see of these characters, I think Walter is probably more clever than McGonagall. But again, that takes planning and prep time, like having the trunk gun. And, like, he has his chemistry skills where he can make, you know, very effective poison gas, or, you know, that chemistry concoction that can burn through steel, et cetera, et cetera. But, like, all of that would take prep time. There's
too much prep time.
Too much prep time. There's no assurance that he'll have the right chemicals on hand. Yeah. Minerva, if she has her wand, which she probably will, because why would she ever be without it? She will have all she needs.
Oh, buddy, just wait until we get into the semifinals and the finals. She's going to be without that wand.
Okay. I'm interesting to hear your argument. But we will finish out round one with two professors. Professor Abraham Van Helsing from Dracula, from Bram Stoker's Dracula and other adaptations thereof, versus Professor Charles Xavier.
All right, for combat purposes, I do have to ask, are we giving Charles Cerebrum? Or Cerebro?
Cerebro.
Yeah, Cerebro, Jesus.
I mean, I wouldn't think so, right? I think, like, that's something that he has to stay still and to connect with. He's not going to be able to, like, move around with it. And obviously, we have Charles, generally speaking, in a wheelchair. But, like, his greatest power, of course, comes from his mind.
All right, so better teacher, Charles Xavier, not even a question. Non-starter, the X-Men. We can just end it there, at least for now. Now, my thing here, does Charles have any way to dodge a crossbow?
He does not have telekinesis.
That is what I'm trying to figure out.
He does not have telekinesis. He does not have any physical combat ability. Okay, here's where I stand on the combat thing. Van Helsing is obviously going to have the combat experience, the combat ability. He fights vampires. He kills Dracula. Charles Xavier is obviously going to have the mental superiority. He's probably more intelligent than Van Helsing. He has his telepathic ability. He is, like, one of, if not the most powerful telepaths on the planet in the X-Men franchise. My thought with this is, if Abraham can get close to Xavier, stake him in the heart. Charles is done. Charles has no fight. No way to resist a stake to the heart or getting his head cut off. I would argue that maybe Van Helsing might have some fight against telepathy because he's used to dealing with vampires and Draculas. So he is aware of, like, their mental telepathic tricks and whatever, and their beguiling abilities. So if either of these combatants has some resistance to the other's abilities, I would argue that it's Van Helsing. Is it enough to overcome Xavier's telepathic ability? Who the fuck knows?
So that is the problem. I don't think that Van Helsing has enough resistance to it, especially because I forgot. I'm pretty sure it's been shown in the movies, or at least the 90s show. Professor X can just create illusions. He can make people see shit that's not there.
For sure.
And he could just kind of do that of give Van Helsing, you know, happy field frolicking through the flowers. Oh no, he walks into something sharp and impales himself, or walks off a cliff, or accidentally drowns in the pool. I don't know. Given that Xavier's school for the gifted isn't really a true school, I mean, I guess it does have some teachers, but definitely more about honing the powers, you really have to wonder how much oversight there is for, like, the dangerous stuff there.
Oh, it's definitely a legal school. Like, it's definitely a legal school. They have math and literature and history classes. Like, it is a boarding school where they also, part of the curriculum is, you know, learning to control your mutant abilities.
I mean, true, but, like, is there, like, a school version of OSHA?
I mean, yeah, the New York School Board.
I don't think they have any power here, but fine.
Probably not they probably wouldn't if Charles Xavier wanted to resist them, but...
I mean, yeah, I was just wondering how many dangerous things there were for Van Helsing to walk into on a school campus. I'd think they'd keep it pretty safe, but we're talking about the X-Men mansion. I think I'm going to give this to Charles, because I don't think that Van Helsing has the psychic resistance needed to avoid this. I definitely think it's a lot closer than people would think, because I really think that Van Helsing could fire off an accurate crossbow pretty quickly.
Definitely.
So I think it's like a 55 Charles versus 45 Van Helsing, because I think a lot of the time he's going to be able to fire off a crossbow shot, because we know he already has them preloaded before Charles can come up with a decent illusion.
All right. Yeah, I would say Charles, the abilities that we know Charles to have from any amount of comics or movies or shows, etc., the abilities we know Charles to have definitely outweighs anything like we can generally expect, like Dracula to have. Like most of the time that Dracula will have like mind control, beguiling abilities, it'll come in the form of look into my eyes type shit. So Van Helsing knowing to resist that or just not look in the eyes isn't going to help against Charles' telepathic abilities when Charles can connect with you telepathically when he doesn't even see you. He's not even in the same room as you. So it's like if Van Helsing has enough resistance to get off like a moment of resistance, he'll have like one shot with a crossbow and or handgun to shoot Charles from a distance. And if he can get that shot off, then he'll probably win. But if Charles can do it from a distance before Abraham has a good shot, then yeah, he just puts him in an illusion or shuts down his mind or puts him to sleep or whatever. Yeah, I think the fight goes to Charles.
Fun. So we have all powered teachers except for Indiana Jones.
Although I will say we on the teacher front between Van Helsing and Xavier, I think this one's also a bit closer than we might expect, because Van Helsing is the one to educate Jonathan Harker and the rest of the crew on what Dracula is and like this age-old, centuries-old threat, this undead monster. They know nothing about Dracula going in, and Van Helsing is able to teach them well enough that they all become skilled enough vampire hunters to take him down. So I will say, Van Helsing's educational ability, lore-wise and combat-wise, is better than you would expect. Charles Xavier obviously has more training experience in different superheroes with the X-Men, so I think I would probably say it's still on Charles' side, because not only does he teaches more multifaceted, you know, areas of education as just a regular school professor, but also a superhero mentor. So I think it still goes to Charles, but I just wanted to give Van Helsing his flowers.
I mean, very good you did. It's been a long time since I've read Dracula. I think I had to read it for one class in high school. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I mean, being the one that teaches everybody else how to kill the big bad definitely gives him a lot of cred.
It's a big thing.
But also, Xavier basically just taught at least 20 superheroes that have, you know, saved the world multiple times on much larger a scale than Dracula.
Fair. But that'll close out round one. So far we have Indiana Jones, Miss Frizzle, Yoda, McGonagall, and Xavier winning our combat rounds. And for our better teachers, we have John Keating, Miss Frizzle, Yoda, McGonagall, and Xavier. So actually pretty, we have mostly equal combatants and equal teachers. The only difference we have is Jones v. Keating.
And don't worry, we are going to get a lot more disconnect, because I don't see the similarities lasting long.
All right. Well, open it up for us, Cole. Between Indiana Jones and Miss Frizzle, who do you think is the better combatant?
Okay, so this puts at issue. I was going to say, if it was Indiana Jones against McGonagall, this was going to be a straight-up battle. Very clear victor.
Okay.
Indiana Jones has dodged cars, dodged trucks, dodged planes before.
Ridden the tank.
But Miss Frizzle is just chaos.
Yes.
She's basically like fighting the after-school PSA version of Deadpool.
For sure.
But Harrison Ford has a whip.
True. Do we want to introduce an element to this combat? I think he didn't need it, but fighting John Keating, I think he took that just with his fisticuffs. But if Miss Frizzle has her magic school bus, as this thing is that is inherently connected with her, character. Do we want to entertain the possibility of Indiana Jones having the magic artifact that he has uncovered in his archaeological pursuits? Meaning he would have the Ark of the Covenant, he would have the Holy Grail, he would have those weird magic crystals from Temple of Doom, he would have the Crystal Skull, which wouldn't really do much for him unless he could connect it with the rest of the alien body, and he has the Dial of Destiny for time travel.
So Dial of Destiny does not help since it's basically a closed time loop to Syracuse.
Well, there you go.
I'm sorry for the spoilers. Ark of the Covenant wouldn't help either. Well,
Ark of the Covenant,
it could if Miss Frizzle didn't know to close her eyes.
Exactly.
Holy Grail, I'm not going to give him because he lost that into
that's fair.
A crevice. Like we said, the Crystal Skull doesn't help. I would be willing to entertain the idea of the stones from the Temple of Doom. I just kind of forgot what they did.
I don't remember them doing anything, really. Like, they kept the village fruitful and alive and healthy and stuff like that. And when the crystal was taken by the cults, they, like, the village suffered and went sick and whatnot.
Okay.
But didn't really have any effect on a singular individual like Indy or anything like that.
True. But single stone brings life, rich crops, and fortune. Like you said, withers and dies without it. They glow when they're close to each other. When used for evil or held against a corrupt high priest like Mola Ram, the stones heat up intensely and burn through flesh.
Huh.
So he has a way to quickly kill Miss Frizzle.
Would you use against evil? Would we classify Miss Frizzle as evil? I don't think so.
Yeah, she's more chaotic neutral, if anything. She's...
Yeah.
Okay, so the stones wouldn't help.
The only artifact... I'll agree with you, like, the idea that he at least decides where the other artifacts go. The Holy Grail, he really just does lose. So I'd agree with, like, if he's going to have any artifacts, it wouldn't be the Grail.
Yeah.
So the Ark of the Covenants would be the most effective weapon.
I don't, it's too big to lug around. I don't think that.
Also
he,
true.
I don't think he could do that prep time. I think it's really hard to beat the bus. I think Miss Frizzle takes this one, but this will be the only time that Miss Frizzle moved on.
Yeah, I guess.
I mean, you can.
Yeah,
you,
I'd probably agree with that.
You can decide how you want to plan it right now, if we want to finish out combat, or if we just immediately want to kick Miss Frizzle to the curb for her teaching skills. It's up to you.
See, I'm still stuck on the Covenant, the Ark of the Covenant. It's not maneuverable, but he really just needs to get it on the playing field and open it up and keep his eyes shut. And then, like, if Miss Frizzle, even with the school bus, comes close. But does the school bus face the wrath of God? Does the school bus have a soul?
The school bus would be fine.
But Miss Frizzle will probably get her eyes melted out and her face melted.
I mean, but could the ghosts enter the magic school bus? Because remember, the Ark of the Covenant is the ghost melting everybody's face off, basically.
Where does the magic in the magic school bus come from? Is it from hell? Who knows?
I feel like hell is a pretty good theory.
I feel like it might be.
So in that case, you have the power of heaven versus hell. I feel like that brings it out to a wash. The bus would be destroyed. It would just be Miss Frizzle.
In which case, I think Miss Frizzle would go down because she wouldn't know to close her eyes.
No, because I feel like the bus and the Ark would destroy themselves. And then I feel like Miss Frizzle would still have chaos magic. Miss Frizzle would still have her 405-pound lift to beat the absolute shit out of Indiana Jones. Like, I just don't see the Ark of the Covenant even being that good of a play. Like, I didn't even want it in. Like, the Ark of the Covenant is stuck in a warehouse.
Yeah, I guess so. I guess Indy also wouldn't use the Ark.
He knows what destruction it could bring.
Because he thinks it should be locked away. Yeah, I guess that's true. I guess we'll give the combat to Miss Frizzle because Indy wouldn't use it.
Yeah, plus there's no one to close it.
True. Well, God closed it in the movie.
Okay, fair point. But then we'd have to say it's Indiana Jones and God versus Miss Frizzle.
Versus Miss Frizzle and the devil boss.
But no, I think it's pretty clear. Miss Frizzle moves on for combat.
Fair. All right, yeah, we'll do our beginning of our teaching discussion as well. John Keating versus Miss Frizzle.
Miss Frizzle's out. There ain't no way. Miss Frizzle's out.
Do you want to take this time to give your argument for John Keating, or when do you want to give your argument for John Keating's teaching ability?
I mean, I could wait for the who's left in the teaching bracket?
Teaching, we have John Keating, Miss Frizzle, Yoda, McGonagall, and Xavier.
I'm going to wait because I have an idea of who John Keating's going to go up against in the final. And I feel like that argument is going to have to be a lot tighter in terms of how I'm thinking about it. Like, it's going to be an open debate who he who he goes against in the final. And I have to be on the top of my game. But no, it is coming. And John Keating will still win this bracket.
Okay. So you're going Keating over Miss Frizzle as a better teacher. I would say Miss Frizzle is very good at educating her kids, her students. They get a very hands-on experience and know the information afterwards very well. I would say John Keating also educates his students very well and is probably better at connecting with his students than Miss Frizzle.
I'll go ahead and just kind of give a quick thing. Miss Frizzle's students are learning a lot of things about what they're learning in books, and they're learning it hands-on, they're learning it practically.
Yes.
But come on, we remember high school. Like, once you start to specialize in your job in college, how much are you really using from all of your classes?
That's fair. That's fair. I guess Keating gives them a lot that they can use in general life.
Exactly. And that's where he just blows Miss Frizzle out of the water.
Okay. Well, next up in combatants, we have Yoda versus McGonagall.
Yoda, he's just going to wrench the wand out of McGonagall's hand. She's powerless, and he then dissects her. Well, sorry, bisects her with a lightsaber.
Good dissect. Yeah, I would say Minerva does need the wand. I would say Minerva McGonagall is probably at a level where she could do some amount of wandless magic, which you know is a thing. But yeah, she does need the wand to do majority of her fighting, of a majority of her magic. Yoda, like, even if she could get the wand away from Yoda, Yoda can either force the wand, the lightsaber back to himself, or just fight with the force. Yeah, Yoda is going to be overall better prepared, I'll say. Combatant, Yoda takes it over McGonagall.
And teaching is where it gets tough.
Teaching again versus Yoda versus McGonagall.
I'm gonna go ahead and say right now, because as I figured out, this is not a perfectly even bracket.
Right.
Xavier being left out in both the combat and in the teaching is fine. I was gonna say he probably would have been in the top three in either one of them for me. So Xavier,
well, we can find a way to sneak him back in. We can give him a combatant.
No, it's fine. I was gonna say
I want to give him a combatant.
Well. You're insane.
I am.
I will go with McGonagall as the better teacher because I think there's just a higher amount of students. Harry Potter saved the world without absolute trouble. Now, was Hogwarts destroyed the process? Yes, but that was more of a defensive fort tactically. And most of the students...
Natural castle.
Most of the students were saved.
Most of them.
So I think we're doing pretty good with McGonagall.
I would say, I definitely argue that Yoda has more students because he's 900 years old and has taught generations and generations of Jedi.
So that's what I was also thinking.
And his students have saved more lives than Harry Potter did because his students have saved whole planets. Several of his students have done that. But I will say, if we take like Luke as an example of one of Yoda's proteges, one of his students, Luke is somebody who has constant support and constant people he can fall back on in the rebellion and Leia and Han and etc. Harry has Hermione and Ron, but when they're really on their own in Deathly Hallows, they're really on their own till they get back to Hogwarts, and they still do a pretty good job, just the three of them.
Okay, so you're saying that's more of a them thing instead of a McGonagall's teaching thing?
Maybe. Yeah. Because they use instruction that they have gotten from other teachers as well, so I guess that'll make sense. But, you know, any of the Jedi proteges under Yoda have also learn from other masters as well.
So I feel like we can just go ahead and say that McGonagall is just the best, I feel like, magic teacher, just because she's a great teacher who just happens to also be a wizard.
Mm-hmm.
But you are right with the kind of scope of how epic the students are because of the teacher.
Yeah.
I mean,
I think it does say more that his students have accomplished a lot more than Minerva's students have.
I do think that you could give this to Yoda. I think I'm coming around to Yoda. I think that Luke Skywalker becoming basically his star protege, you know, by defeating the Empire,
mm-hmm.
definitely kind of boosts him up. Like, I'm okay with, you know, the Darth Vader and Anakin and the Count Dooku. I think that goes more to actively having an adversary that was there to undermine your work, which mm-hmm. I don't think McGonagall really had. She didn't have that with any of her students, of somebody being like, hey, I know that she's teaching you transmutation and also just how to be a good person as a wizard, but let me tell you how to be evil.
Right. Yeah, she didn't teach Voldemort or anything like that.
She may have taught Voldemort.
No, she didn't. Tom Riddle would have been out of school by the time she taught.
Oh, okay. Well, you know more Harry Potter lore than I do. But,
Yeah.
Okay, so if that's the case, then I think by the good things that Yoda's students have done, and again, his kind of descendants of Yoda's line of students ended the Clone Wars.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Now, how much that really do? A question for another episode.
Fair.
But yeah, I'd put Yoda above McGonagall now. You have changed my mind.
Yeah, I'd agree. And we talk about, like, Yoda was, you know, involved. He was present for the fall of the Republic, but also he's been a Jedi Master for a long time before that. So I guess most of his record is pretty clean until that big fuck up.
I mean, true. I was gonna say other than Dooku, which was in only 10% of his life. Wasn't a major fuck up.
If that, yeah, fair. But we do have Charles Xavier. So why don't for this we have just immediately jump into Yoda v. Charles Xavier, because that is the same on both combat and teaching.
So interestingly enough, I was actually going to take the teaching round of Yoda, Charles, and John Keating, and immediately throw Yoda out of the race.
Okay, you want to do all three right away?
Well, I mean, clearly with Yoda versus Xavier, I feel like Xavier is the better teacher.
Okay.
Because of the X-Men also stopping world-destroying things without Yoda's fuck-ups that could have been seen. I can't really think of very explicit fuck-ups that Xavier had. I mean, the disillusion of some students that went to join Magneto. I wouldn't count the Phoenix Force as his fuck-up.
Fair. Unless you look at X-Men 3 movie, in which case it's very much his fault for, like, concealing that broken part of Jean's mind in her head.
We forget that movie exists.
We try to. But, yeah, Charles and Yoda have a similar scale compared to Yoda versus McGonagall, where they are both localized on one planet and intergalactic.
Yeah, but I mean, even intergalactic versus one planet, they both still have a saving massive amounts of people scale.
Mm-hmm.
Which I feel that after a certain number is just mass amounts of people, and really doesn't hit any greater. So I would still go Charles, and I think that Charles tries to protect his students more.
Mm-hmm.
Because Yoda's busy doing the politics. He's kind of absent-minded to all of the younglings and basically overseeing them as the principal administrator. I mean, he's good with... Mm-hmm. the direct students he taught, but Charles mm-hmm. with the entire school, I'm pretty sure he goes to bat with, like, you know, the legislator and, you know, Congress and things like this, where he's like, my students deserve rights too, and don't worry, we got this.
Yeah, they both, Yoda and Charles Xavier, have to step out of the classroom and get political, and Charles still makes the time to connect with all of his students in a closer degree than Yoda. And he, like, helps lead a country when they go to Krakoa.
Exactly. But I was going to say, the way that Stan Lee wrote it, if I'm pretty sure a lot of people agree at this point, X-Men's basically just a comic allegory for, like, racism. And
Yeah.
Basically, the battles for, like, inclusion in the 60s, right?
Right. Yeah. Over time, it has been translated to be any sort of disenfranchised or minority group. Obviously, like, a popular connection, a popular comparison for it is, like, civil rights movements and stuff like that, or gay rights movements, stuff like that.
Yeah, but it's just basically the outsiders and basically accepting the outsiders kind of thing. So, right. And Charles goes to bat for the outsiders, which are his students.
That's true.
So I feel like in terms of teaching, Charles is the better teacher.
Mm-hmm.
If we also get to Charles versus Yoda in terms of combat, this is where I feel like Charles is screwed. I feel like Yoda has the Force and he's got him.
I feel like Xavier, they both have telepathic abilities. They both have mental capabilities. I think that Charles's telepathy is definitely better than Yoda's, because Yoda's takes immense amounts of concentration and time to adjust and meditation and stuff like that. Charles can just snap into your mind right away, no problem. Yoda does have the superior physical capabilities with being able to move around himself and also force moving boulders and machines and starships.
I mean, it all goes down to speed, right?
Right.
Because I feel like the extra reaction time, I feel like Yoda's mind is strong enough that he would just get more reaction time than Van Helsing would.
Agreed. Like, I think it could be ever so slight. Right. I think if Charles can get in Yoda's mind, Charles might have it. But I think Yoda has enough resistance to mental messing around that Yoda has enough time to resist it long enough to crush Xavier with a rock.
Yeah, or just throw the lightsaber.
Break his wheelchair wheel.
But yeah, again, I feel like this is a pretty close one. I feel like it's probably a 55-45 again.
Sure.
But I just think that Yoda has enough resistance given his Jedi training of no emotion, being able to focus inward on the mind, to get just that extra probably few milliseconds of reaction time that would give him the edge to either force something on Xavier or just throw the lightsaber.
Agreed. Well, that leaves us with our final round for both brackets. On our combatant bracket, we have Miss Frizzle versus Yoda.
Yoda's hopping on that magic school bus, cutting into it like Qui-Gon cut into the Trade Federation's doors, and is killing Miss Frizzle. See, you're stunned because my argument is solid, and you cannot think why Miss Frizzle's chaos magic will work now that she doesn't have a bus.
I don't know. I would imagine that the magic school bus can travel fast enough that it would be difficult for Yoda to get a hang on it with the Force, or like get her. I feel like the magic school bus is going to be quicker than Yoda.
No.
Yeah. No, I think so.
Yoda is like Olympic gymnast level of reflex.
But the magic school bus can turn into a rocket.
So it's Yoda.
No, that's not an argument. Magic school bus transformations. What all does it transform into? Go away, login screen. What all does this thing transform into? It transforms into a steam, sort of a forklift thing. It transforms into a hang glider, a submarine, an actual rocket ship, a glass bottom boat, a surfboard, a hot air balloon, a weather plane, a time machine, a beehive, a bee, an electric plug, a dump truck, a plane, a pool raft, a hybrid vehicle. Yeah, the only thing out of all this is that's going to be at all useful is the fact that it can turn into a rocket. It can turn into an alligator. It can turn into a bat. It can turn into bacteria. Ooh, it can turn into bacteria, meaning it can get Yoda sick. Does that mean that the magic school bus can reproduce, make more magic school buses?
I don't like that implication.
No, I don't either. But yeah, I think the only transformation that the magic school bus is going to get any use out of is, of course, turning into a rocket ship or like a fucking plane. like a fucking 747 magic school bus.
And we really just don't think Yoda is fast enough to catch a plane. Or that he'd be able to, like, stop it with the Force.
I mean, do it or not, there is no try. But we know from, like, use of the Force that it takes, like, you can't stop everything right away. You can't pull up, like, a Force shield around you and just stop everything coming at you. Like, if you could, like, we know you can affect blaster blasts from when we see Kylo Ren stop the blaster blast, the plasma blast in Force Awakens. If that's the case, then why doesn't every Jedi and Sith just use the Force to stop every blast rather than just blocking it with their lightsaber? You know what I mean?
Yeah, fair.
There is, my thought is, like, there is some amount of speed that is going to surpass the Force user's concentration, their ability to concentrate on the incoming object.
True, but also Yoda did get knocked down by that spinning, like, basically mini Senate living chair. Room. Yeah.
Yeah.
All right.
That wasn't flying near as fast as a 747 bus.
If
Airbus. There you go.
If the magic school bus has the speed of a rocket that can go above the speed of sound.
If it can escape the atmosphere, it can.
Then Yoda just may be screwed by speed.
I think the magic school bus could just, like, I think Miss Frizzle could just drive the spaceship school bus into Yoda, and Yoda wouldn't be able to react quick enough, and that would just kill him.
Yeah. Okay. Look, fine. Miss Frizzle wins combat. Can we agree, though, that if Miss Frizzle, even with her superhuman abilities, did not have that school bus, then Yoda would win this bracket?
Oh, yeah, obviously. I think Miss Frizzle would have been done probably against, maybe against Indiana Jones?
No, she had the strength. He would have been decked.
Indy has a gun.
No, not normally.
Yeah, he does. He always has his gun on him. That's the fucking scene in Raiders of the Lost Ark.
I thought he picked that up somewhere with the sword fighter.
The swordsman comes in. The swords guy comes in and he's too tired to fight with the whip, so he just pulls out the gun and shoot him. That's his gun. He always has a gun on him.
Okay, fine. Indiana Jones may have just been able to pull out the gun against Miss Frizzle and done the sword fighter.
Yeah.
Okay, but Yoda wins this without the magic school bus. That is my one caveat that we have to include here.
Oh yeah, agreed.
Alright, I feel like we're good to move on to teachers.
Miss Frizzle, you have won our combat. Congratulations. But yeah, teachers, we have, finishing off, who is the better teacher between John Keating and Charles Xavier?
John Keating, Robin Williams, Dead Poets Society, Carpe Diem, seize the day. This man comes in as an English teacher, coming back to his alma mater private school that prepares everybody for the Ivy Leagues, apparently, stresses kids the fuck out.
Yes.
Comes in, says, fuck this book by Pritchard ranking poetry on some sort of math scale. That's not how poetry works. You don't need numbers. If anybody tells you that you're in an English class and you need numbers, they're wrong. I mean, except for grades. I'd love to see somebody make the argument that grade numbers shouldn't count either. Sometimes I wish that in English, but still.
Agreed.
Shout out to Miss McCarthy, our high school junior English teacher. Love the class. It was my favorite year of English in high school. But man, would getting your grade back scare you sometimes?
Yes.
Because she was hard on you when you wrote essays. I mean, it prepared us, but she made but she made sure your essays were good.
Certainly.
But yeah, either way, back to Keating. Yes. So again, having a teacher telling you rip out the first like chapter of a book because it's absolute utter bullshit. Amazing. You know where that class is going, and it's taken you to some great places. Two. Another lesson of the day. Takes everybody outside. Just tells them to start walking. They all start walking together like a weird military group because they've been brainwashed. And then one guy says, no, I'm going to be that asshole, and starts walking at the weirdest time to walk of all time. But he does what nobody else would have. John Keating is teaching them freedom, the ability to make mistakes and be wrong, and just teaching them to live life. He's teaching them how the poets felt when they wrote the poems. He wanted his kids to write poems. And Ethan Hawke's character struggled this entire movie because he was like, how do I be emotional? And that was kind of the thing with the kids in this movie, is they just needed some sort of outlet, basically, for all of the stress of this course. Now, some will make the biggest gripe against John Keating is that one of his students did kill himself.
It's not Keating's fault.
If you haven't seen the movie, it's the guy who plays Wilson in House.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to blame that on Red Foreman. Red Foreman was that kid's father in the movie.
Yeah, it's definitely the dad's fault.
But, and I will cry earlier and earlier in this movie every single time, much like Remember the Titans. Because this one, to me, is just, I feel like, the most relatable to everybody. I feel like Charles Xavier is really good for his mutant kids.
Mm-hmm.
And could that be applied in allegory to everybody? Yes. But John Keating takes more of the stance of he teaches his students to be free thinkers. He teaches them, most importantly, carpe diem, to seize the day. And he just wants them to be expressive and basically not these drones. They're basically just getting mass produced to go into whatever industry, whatever the parents want them to go to. Like, again, these were just stressed out private school kids. He truly wanted what was best for his students and was willing to get fired and lose his job to make sure that that's what happened. And again, a lot of people could also make the argument of, hey, this guy wasn't teaching what was in the syllabus to get them into college or whatever. Yes, that is an argument to be made. Mm-hmm. But I promise you that, like, when I was in high school, I had the freedom to come up with some crazy ideas when we were reading poetry. Mm-hmm. I came up with ideas that Walt Whitman fucked up somebody's poem because he didn't understand death. I came up with one that Emily Dickinson's poems were all a series of letters between her and a second person, and we never got the second person's letters to prove the conversation. I also came up with one that somebody wrote theirs entirely on drugs. And it just made sense.
Not unlikely.
And I could show where they were on drugs for specific passages.
Mm-hmm.
But it was that type of freedom that truly made me love poetry. If I had been reading poetry for this, like, very detailed mathematical, like, analysis, I wouldn't have had a good time at all. I probably wouldn't have read deeper into the messages of poetry and, like, actually gotten the human message out of it. Keating reminds me a lot of Dolly. Miley Cyrus had an interview years ago where Dolly Parton had basically said, you know, I don't like some of the things that you're doing with your life, but that Dolly would always be there for her. And she knew that Miley just had to take this time to work it out for herself. And if Miley needed help working anything out, Dolly would be there. She wasn't there to control Dolly, or Dolly wasn't there to control Miley, but she would be there for that support system.
Mm-hmm.
I think that John Keating as a teacher is up there in terms of the teaching people to be good humans.
Yeah.
And again, I am probably biased here. Dead Poets Society is one of my favorite movies of all time. I watch it yearly.
Mm-hmm.
And right around this season too, because it starts off in the fall. I would say the cover of the movie is just him enjoying the falling leaves. I mean, I could see arguments either way, but in my heart, John Keating is probably the best teacher that has ever been shown on TV, film, books.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think so much of Keating's character, so much of the core of it is so much of what is important to the character of John Keating is that he gives this figure that his students can constantly go back to, this person that these young men know will never turn them down, turn them away, be disappointed in them, be a constant guide for them, like you were saying about Miley Cyrus's connection with Dolly Parton, this figure that will never judge them as long as they're making their own decisions, which is so important to young people in the stage that those students are, that they need freedom from structure they've been stuck into. Like you said, this is a school that is preparing you for a future that has been plotted out for you. And so much of what Keating does is teaching them to step out of the structure because that structure might not contain who they really are.
And even if that structure did, he wanted to challenge them so that they could find themselves,
see it for themselves
again.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep. Can't disagree with any of that. I think with that, we can't help but put John Keating as our best teacher.
I really need to go back and watch Dead Poets Society. I'm going to do it after this recording now.
It is time.
I'm not ready. What if I don't want to cry tonight, Kevin?
Cole, if it's time, it's time.
Well, everybody, I think it's time to sign off then. I'm going to go grab me my box of tissues. And, well, I guess we'll be back for our next recording and see if I'm still crying.
Yeah. If you have any thoughts on facets we missed of these characters that would determine if they are better combatants or better teachers, let us know. And say thank you to your teacher for us. They do a lot for you, I'm sure.
Yeah, I'd say down in the comments, I'd say we'd love to read them. Maybe put like a story of like your favorite teacher that you ever had in college, high school, middle school, even before that. Yeah. Or, like I said, the Oxford Dictionary is the best. Doesn't even have to be somebody whose job is literally a paid teacher.
Mm-hmm.
So any stories of any teacher, we'd love to see them. So put them down in the comments. All right. Well, for now, we will see you soon. But I have been Cole Browning.
I have been Kata MacArthur.
And this has been Unquestionably Nerdy. Carpe Diem. Seize the day.